What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 78. We're going to be talking about the ketogenic diet and heart health. We've done a whole series on the keto diet and all the benefits of it. So we've talked about keto for diabetes, keto for just carbohydrates compared to fat as far as clean fuel sources. So today we're going to talk about why following a low-carb diet is good for your heart. But first, a quick check-in. So Tom, how's your week been?
It's been pretty good. So I'm getting really close to my next 50K. It's coming up in like 17 days from now. So
oh, wow. Really?
Yeah.
Damn.
So I've been definitely like pushing myself harder and harder. And this last time in the gym, I don't want to say I pushed myself too hard, but it's taking me a little bit longer to recover than like usual.
You mean soreness wise?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I haven't done my long run. Usually my longest run is on Tuesday. I'm pushing that back to Thursday just to make sure I'm fully recovered. Because the last thing I want to do right now is get hurt or have any setbacks. And especially, like, I'm going to do, like, a 20 to 25-mile run. So it's going to be, like, a long run. And then after that, it's going to be nice and easy until the race. So, like, you know, definitely pyramid up and pyramid down at the same time. So, yeah, like, I just killed it in the gym. And, yeah, now, like,
my was this all treadmill work?
No. So I do weights, but everything I do weights is either like balance or one leg. So I mean, even the single leg stuff is kind of balancing. The thing behind that is like there's other ways of getting strong other than just building a lot of muscle. Building a lot of muscle really isn't that big of an advantage for something that I'm doing. So the other way to do that is just kind of building up, or not building up, but just increasing your like mind muscle connection and just being able to recruit more motor units. So you do that through like balancing stuff and single leg stuff, and then also doing some stuff while you're a little bit tired. So I do a whole weight training session. I get a lot of weird looks because I'm doing hex barbell deadlifts on top of a Bosu ball.
Yeah. So, I would look at you weird. I'd be like, this dude's dumb.
Yeah. So a lot of people are looking at me weird, like, oh my God, this guy's going to kill himself. But I've been doing Bosu ball work for, I don't know, a few years now.
You're good at it.
I'm pretty comfortable. And it's a lot easier when you have a bar that's like long. Like if you're walking across a high wire,
yeah, something
you
narrow.
Get a long ass pull
bouncy.
To help you balance. So it's not that hard. And then at the same time, like once you all that added weight makes the ball flatten a lot more. So it's not that hard to balance.
Okay.
So it's just a way to look cool without really. I mean, I wouldn't recommend people do it unless like you got some balance in the skills.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'm doing like.
And even then, don't put like 5 plates on the bar.
No, I'm doing a little over 200.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think normally flat, I think I do like 3, but like right now I'm like doing 225.
Yeah.
Nothing too crazy. Doing stuff like that, and then after my like solid leg workout, then I do the sprint work. So my legs are already tired. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to push myself the hardest. They're already like pretty fatigued. So they have to recruit as many motor units as possible to be able to, like...
Just to do it.
Yeah, just so they can deal with that. And I'm maxing out the treadmill. I didn't know I could do that, mm-hmm. but it's not as hard as I thought.
Really?
It only goes up to 16 miles an hour.
Oh, okay.
And it takes a long time for you to get up to 16 miles an hour.
Oh, that's a build up to it?
Yeah, so it takes probably about a solid 15 to 20 seconds to get from, like, the walking speed to the sprinting speed. And then from there, I'm able to hold that pace for another 20 seconds.
Okay.
So ideally, I want my like sprints to be like 10 to 15 seconds long, somewhere around there. But on this, they're about like 35 seconds, kind of. I don't know. It's kind of weird.
I mean, you're still going fast.
Yeah.
For sure.
And then just pick myself up, put my legs on the side, turn the treadmill down, and then wait for it to get kind of slow, and then
run,
and then go back down to a walk.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you don't need to... You being bigger doesn't help you at all, but you being more efficient helps you tremendously.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And that's what you're doing.
Yeah, just trying to recruit as many muscles as I can. Mm-hmm. You know, build up all those little balancing muscles, all those little things that you don't really think about in like a traditional standpoint. But if you're
like, I don't worry about that.
But yeah, you exactly. don't need to. But yeah, you're not running 30 plus miles.
Definitely
trying
not.
Trying to train up to running 100 miles.
Yeah, because you have to carry all that weight 100 miles.
Yeah, I need every single muscle in my lower body to be as efficient as possible.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's new with you?
You know, this week, I guess pull back the curtains a little bit. So after we do this podcast, I'll edit it, and I'll usually edit out some F-bombs, or if I talk crap about somebody, I'll usually cut it out. You know what I'm saying? Because I feel fine when we're talking, but then I re-listen to it, I'm like, oh, I shouldn't have said that. But I very rarely actually listen to the podcast after that. It's completely different when you listen to it and you're editing. It's just, you're not thinking, you're not consuming the information. You know what I'm saying? Like yeah. When you're learning it, you're kind of thinking critically. So we did the series on diabetes the last couple weeks, and I was going to send it to a few people who are diabetic. And I was like, you know what? I should just re-listen to this just in case, like, it sucks. All right? Because I don't know if it does or not. And so I re-listened to both those episodes, just driving. And I was like, you know what? This shit's pretty good. I was like, I've gotten half decent at this. Or, you know, we both have. You know, just the way it kind of goes back and forth. And I just thought we've come a long way. You know, we're pretty close to 100 episodes now. You know, we've gotten pretty decent at it.
Have you gone back and listened to some of the old ones?
I went back and listened to the creatine one maybe like 6 months ago. And I thought it was hot trash.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure. It makes me want to delete it. I won't, but it makes me want to.
The last old one I listened to was an interview with Travis. I think we released that on New Year's.
Yeah.
The
facultative one, carnivore.
Yeah, that one was a lot better than I thought it was at the moment. But yeah, I haven't gone back any further than that. I'm afraid to.
Yeah, no, don't do it. You'll instantly regret it. Yeah. But yeah, that's it with me, man. Just same old stuff. And obviously putting this stuff together. And we're both pro ketogenic diet. And we both, you know, think it's great for the vast majority of people out there. So doing this whole series on the benefits of it was something, you know, we both really wanted to do. And so let's get into it just as far as the ketogenic diet and heart health. The first thing I wanted to touch on is just why people should worry about their heart health. And honestly, it's because there's a good chance you're going to die from heart disease.
It's the number one killer in America, and it has been for damn near 100 years.
So it's like, if it's not going to happen to you, it's going to happen to a relative, a friend, you know, somebody like that. It's just, those are the odds. So how can a ketogenic diet help your heart is something you really should be worried about, you know? And the thing is, the ketogenic diet is a high-fat diet, obviously. A properly formulated keto diet will be higher in saturated fat than polyunsaturated fats, since it's going to be animal-based, like that's what we promote. This goes against everything the AHA says about how to keep your heart healthy. And the AHA is just the American Heart Association, and they're the people. Like, you ever go to the grocery store and you see, what's the stamp now? Is it still a red heart for heart health? Or is it stars or something?
Something like that. And this was, like, the funniest thing one of my nutrition teachers, like, ever told me. It's like, if you ever see that, like, stamp of heart health approval, don't buy that shit because it's poison.
Yeah. That's a good teacher.
Run the other way. Like, yeah. That's what his advice was on that.
That's true, right? And that's exactly why I wanted to do this podcast, because that stamp of approval, people see it, that little heart symbol saying, you know, AHA approved, heart healthy. And that just couldn't be further from the truth. And something like, I know oatmeal gets it all the time. I know a bunch of cereals get it all
Cheerios
the time.
Cheerios is a big one.
Cheerios is a big one as well. Yeah. And that just isn't true. It's not heart healthy. And the AHA is just wrong, you know?
And they're starting to advertise, at least on my like Facebook, I'm seeing their ads all the time. And their plate is just like a salad with a bunch of fruits and stuff. There's nothing close to an animal source in the picture. I want to comment on there. I'm like, what do you guys know about heart health? You guys have been the leaders in heart health for, I don't know, 60 plus years. It's still the number one killer. What are you guys doing giving advice out?
Yeah, just think if, like, go back to, like, a sports analogy. If you had a losing record in the NBA for 60 years, your head coach is getting fired.
Yeah.
No one's keeping their job that long, you know?
And nobody's going to be looking to you for advice.
No, like, this is a bum. You're the Cleveland Browns. Like, shut up.
Yeah, nobody's going to be like, oh, yeah, that's the model that we need to set.
Uh-huh.
That's the new standard. Like, no, nobody's going to be doing that.
Yeah, the AHA will tell you to eat a low-fat diet. And even the fat they tell you to eat will be from polyunsaturated sources, like from vegetables. Think canola oil or soy oil. Definitely not saturated fat. They'll tell you not to eat saturated fat. And the crazy thing is, fat is the heart's primary fuel source. And it's not just fat, but saturated fat the heart really loves. So here's a study titled A Myocardial Metabolism of Fatty Acids. And like always, I'll link these studies on the website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com. So check it out. You can read them yourself. But here's a quote. The determination of the iodine numbers in plasma revealed that there was proportionately greater usage of saturated fat than unsaturated fatty acids by the heart. So the heart preferentially picks out saturated fat to burn. And when we don't eat times of fasting, the primary fuel used by our heart is fat. Here's another quote from the same study. The post-absorptive state, significant amounts of both esterified and free fatty acids were extracted by the myocardium. In the fasting state, myocardial energy production is dependent upon non-carbohydrates, primarily fatty acids. So when we're eating fat, the heart pulls out saturated fat for fuel. It loves it for a fuel source. And when we don't eat fat, the heart loves fat. So why is the AHA telling us to be on a low-fat diet?
It makes no sense. And what's really funny to me is, like, the diet that they're recommending, you could only do that today. You could not do this diet 200 years ago.
So there's not fields of just canola oil and we can just pull and drink?
I don't even know if we knew what canola oil was 200 years ago. I don't even know if we were making that.
No.
Because that would have been before the Industrial Revolution. So I don't think we would have had industrial seed oil.
Yeah, we wouldn't have a way to even get the oil out of those shitty seeds.
And right now we're in February. Like, we live in an area where there's tons of agriculture. All the fields are empty right now. So where are you going to be getting all your fruits and veggies? Like, okay, yeah, maybe you can get them from South America. Nope, we don't have transportation like that. We don't have airplanes that can ship them here fast enough.
No.
We don't have advances in refrigeration.
Yeah.
So, like, this diet that they're recommending is only possible now. And now is the time when heart disease has been the number one killer. It wasn't the number one killer 200 years ago.
No.
So this silly diet that they're recommending, this silly fad diet, is just responsible for heart disease.
Yeah.
You want heart disease, follow their recommendations.
Exactly, yeah. You'll be a client real quick and you'll just be, honestly, giving money to the system. We don't want that. So the big question is, why does a heart use fat primarily for fuel? It's because it is the hardest working organ in our body. So it needs to produce the most amount of ATP possible, and that's through aerobic respiration, also known as oxidative phosphorylation of fatty acids. And that's simply when the body strips electrons off of food we eat inside our mitochondria in the presence of oxygen. This is the most efficient and cleanest way to produce energy, and it only occurs inside mitochondria, which are the power plants of our cell.
Yeah, if you wanted more information on just how clean it is, you could talk about the NADH podcast. Mm-hmm. And was that the same one as Fast versus Carb, which is cleaner?
No, they're separate, yeah.
Okay. We've been talking about just how much better ketones are and how much cleaner fat is as a fuel source as compared to carbs. So it's getting a little confusing.
Yeah, 100%, yeah.
But yeah, there's two different podcasts you can listen to about more information on that.
Yep, exactly, yeah. There's just those two sentences alone require 2 1-hour podcasts to go into detail. Yeah, so they're there. Guess what organ has the most mitochondria? You know, that's a real big question. If mitochondria are so important, if mitochondria love fat, what organ has the most mitochondria?
It would have to be the one that's working the hardest and always working.
So 24/7, yeah. 365.
I guess the heart.
Yep, the heart, exactly. So here's a quote. What cells have the most mitochondria? It's your heart and muscle cells. With about 5,000 mitochondria per cell, that contains far more mitochondria than any other organ in the body. That's because the constantly beating heart works harder than any other organ in your body. Heart muscle cells have extra special demand for ATP to keep the heart pumping 24/7 over a lifetime. Compared to the tissues of a bicep muscle, has about 200 mitochondria per cell. So we're going from 5,000 in the heart to 200 in a bicep. Huge difference.
Yeah, that's a really big difference. I'd be interested to see, like, something, a muscle that you're using all the time, like your calf, something like that.
Maybe.
See how that would compare. But I still don't think it's going to be close to 5,000.
Yeah, because when you're obviously sleeping and stuff, you're not using your calf that much. Yeah. So the heart is packed full of mitochondria. The only place in your body that can use fat for fuel is our mitochondria. So it makes sense that the heart is designed to run off of fat. How can we maximize the amount of energy our mitochondria produce? And it's by burning fat for fuel is one of the major ways we can do that. we get way more ATP from burning fat than we do carbohydrates. For example, we get 36 ATP from burning glucose. We get 48 ATP at the very least from burning fat, if not more. It's in the hundreds depending on how long the fatty acid chain is.
Yeah, because just the term fat means so many different things. Are we talking about palmitic acid? Like, there's a ton of different fat.
Yeah, exactly. Even if we're talking about ketones, because those get associated all the time as well, you know? And it's not just fatty acids that are great for heart health. Like I said, ketone bodies are also cardioprotective. Most people get ketone bodies and fat mixed up. So ketones are created from fat when fat isn't eaten with carbohydrates. That's why a high-fat, low-carb diet results in elevated ketones in our blood. That's a trick. Eat a bunch of fat without the carbs, you will produce ketones. The primary ketone body is beta-hydroxybutyrate. And before I read this quote, I just want to outline that damage to the heart in situations like a heart attack are caused usually from something called ischemia, which means low oxygen due to reduced amount of blood flow going to that particular area. So for a short period of time, the heart doesn't have access to oxygen and tissues die as a result. Because ischemia, that word is going to come up a lot and a few quotes come up. So that's why. And ketone bodies can help with this situation. Here's a quote. Elevated concentrations of beta-hydroxybutyrate may prevent myocardial damage by preventing the formation of damaging intermediates, as well as by serving as an alternate energy source. Indeed, cardioprotective effects have been observed using in vivo ischemia in rats subjected to starvation-induced ketosis, and also via intravenous injections of beta-hydroxybutyrate immediately prior to ischemic injury, which conferred a significant decrease in both infarct size, which is the area of dead tissue, and myocardial cell death. So just elevated amount of ketones protect the heart from these damaging effects of low blood oxygen.
Yeah, just what you were talking about earlier, ketones are a much cleaner fuel source than glucose.
That's what it is. And obviously we elevate ketones on a low-carb ketogenic diet. That's what we want. Here's another quote. Moreover, it has been demonstrated that a low-carb ketogenic diet enhances cardiac tolerance to global ischemia. This study revealed a significant decrease in the number of mitochondria in rats fed a high-carbohydrate diet and an increase in the number of mitochondria in those fed a low-carb ketogenic diet compared to normal diet group. Rats on low-carb ketogenic diet had a remarkable tolerance to ischemia and a faster recovery of cardiac function following reperfusion. And reperfusion is when blood supply and oxygen returns to a damaged area. And so pretty much what that quote means is rats on a low-carb diet had more mitochondria than rats fed a standard carb-based diet, and they recovered way faster from ischemia injury, like a heart attack. Sounds pretty cardioprotective to me.
That's what I would want to happen.
You don't want, yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you have some injury happen, you want to recover. First of all, you want to experience the least amount of damage. And the damage you do experience, you want to recover from quickly. And I also just wanted to play kind of devil's advocate here, because actually, we've been getting some comments lately. There's ways you can nitpick what we say. Like, oh, that's not right, you know?
Well, we talked about this a million times. Like, when you try to simplify a bunch of complex stuff, you're going to be wrong.
Yeah.
You can't simplify everything and be 100% right. And there's outliers to everything. So, and honestly, I don't even know how much about nutrition we as like a human species even understand. Is it 20%? Maybe. Is it 4%? Maybe. I don't think it's in the 80s. Like,
yeah, I know you say that a lot. And it's just people like to point out, like, you know, if the details aren't 100% right, then that doesn't make me wrong. It's just that's what, how we had to explain it to make it as understandable as possible. You know what I mean? But so there are some studies out there which demonstrate that a ketogenic diet results in the improvement of cardiovascular health, which 100% I just talked about. But there are also studies that show the complete opposite. So this is what causes all this confusion in the diet world. No one really reads these papers. Really, they just look at the headlines. For example, in an animal study, this is going to be a quote. They found rats were fed for low-carb ketogenic diet for 2 weeks. Here's a quote. They found that the low-carb ketogenic diet resulted in impaired left ventricle performance during global LIF, reduced recovery of function following LFI earlier as well, LFI and reperfusion, and 10 to 20-fold increased injury as measured by lactate dehydrogenase release and histologic infarct area. So pretty much what that means is the low-carb group did way worse. And I was like, okay, what's going on here? Because we both know if we post something on the Heejang diet, some naysayer out there is going to pull a study like this and say, look at this, you know? So I was like, okay, let me go through this paper real fast. So, and it didn't say it in the methods. It didn't say it in the abstract, what diet these actually rats were fed, okay? So I had to go through, and I saw all they gave was that the diet was 60% fat, 30% protein, and 10% carbs.
That sounds pretty good.
It does sound pretty good, right? If you came to me and you're like, oh, this is my ketogenic diet, I'd be like, you're golden, bro. If you're losing weight, you're feeling good, just keep it the same. But the fat source on this study was canola oil.
Wait, isn't that the heart healthy one that the AHA recommends?
It is. And that's what resulted in all these damn bad results from the ketogenic diet. You know, that's a problem. And that's a problem with most ketogenic studies. It's just ignorant scientists just think you can replace saturated fat with polyunsaturated fat. Like, it still fits the keto macros. Fat is fat, right? Wrong. There's a huge problem when you replace heart-healthy saturated fat with polyunsaturated fat. Remember, the heart loves saturated fat, not polyunsaturated fat at all.
Well, do you think these scientists were ignorant, or do you think they're...
promoting a narrative?
They have an agenda, and they want the ketogenic diet to fail.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I guess just me thinking, obviously I wrote that they were ignorant. I hope that they were ignorant. But if you had a narrative to spin and it was to make the ketogenic diet look bad, this is how you do it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get into a conspiracy theory like thing here, but if you give me money, like, I can give you whatever results you want when it comes to the nutritional world. That's why there's so many conflicting studies. It's not hard. You want me to make water look bad? I will make water look bad. It's not that hard to do.
Yeah.
There's ways to form any type of a study to make it fail, and this is a prime example of it.
Yeah. So polyunsaturated fats, and I guess, I don't know, maybe I should clarify, there's three really types of fats. So you have saturated fats, you have monounsaturated fat, which would be oleic acid. That's the primary fatty acid in olive oil. And then you have polyunsaturated fats, which have a lot of double bonds in them, and that makes them very unstable. They're very prone to oxidation, and you can think of oxidation as just like something going rancid, something going bad.
Just damage.
Yeah. So polyunsaturated fats are not stable at all. And polyunsaturated fats were never designed to be a fuel source. It's designed for something called prostaglandin production, which are kind of locally produced hormones, and also to allow the membranes in our brain to be extremely fluid. So high levels of polyunsaturated fats in the diet are all bad. And that's something I talk about a lot. Actually, you know what? I don't talk about it a lot. I think about it a lot to myself.
So you talk to yourself about it a lot.
I talk to myself about it a lot. But it makes sense that, you know, you hear a lot that omega-3 pills or even something like salmon, fish that are high in omega-3 fats, omega-3 is a polyunsaturated fat, are good for your brain. That's because our brain is predominantly made out of fat. And the most concentration of polyunsaturated fats in our body are inside our brain. And that's because it allows the membranes in our brain to be very fluid, so they can honestly change shape very readily. And that's honestly great if you think about right now I'm talking and I'm moving my hands. Every time I move my fingers, my brain releases a signal down to my fingers and told me to move, right? And it happens so fast, we don't really think about it. But in that entire time, a cell, I guess a vesicle has been created, packed full of neurotransmitters, and then released. All that shit happens like that fast.
Yeah.
So we need these membranes to be very fluid, and polyunsaturated fats allow that to happen, but they're very unstable. That's why the brain is also chock full of cholesterol, because cholesterol acts as an antioxidant and cleans up the reactive oxygen species from the polyunsaturated fats. So it's a perfect little system. It makes sense, but no one really thinks of it that way.
And it makes sense that that's occurring in the brain, but it doesn't make sense that that's occurring throughout your body, which will happen if all your diet is polyunsaturated fat.
Yes, exactly. And specifically in our brain, it's necessary. Everywhere else, it's definitely not. Like I said, our diet high in polyunsaturated fat is bad. And are there studies showing this? There sure are. So this is the anti-coronary club trial. It showed that more people died, which is 26 compared to 6, due to coronary heart disease when saturated fats were replaced with polyunsaturated fats. So let that sink in. That is literally exact opposite of what the AHA recommends.
Yeah, they're telling you to take away your saturated fat, replace it with polyunsaturated fats like canola oil and soybean oil.
Yep.
So that's where heart disease is growing, or is staying the same, even though we have so many medications trying to battle it.
Yeah, it's definitely not getting better. So here's another one. The National Diet Heart Trial, which was a randomized double-blind study, also showed a higher number of cardiovascular events on a diet that was high in polyunsaturated fats than a diet high in saturated fat. Thus, advice to replace saturated fats with polyunsaturated fats may increase the risk of coronary heart disease, cardiovascular events, death due to coronary heart disease, and overall mortality.
So that's like the gold standard of studies, a randomized double-blind study. Like, yes, that's what we want. And they're talking about overall mortality too, which the heart disease, all that stuff is important, but overall mortality is what I care about more than anything. Like, I don't care if I'm going to die from heart disease. I care if I'm going to die.
Yeah.
And so, like, this is a great study right here.
It is. So high saturated fat has been shown to be heart healthy. Now let's look at the standard recommendation of low-fat diets, and let's see how that fares with heart health.
Well, not just heart healthy, just overall healthy, if it's cutting back on overall mortality.
Yeah, that's true. So in the Women's Health Initiative, which was a randomized controlled trial, included 48,000 women were fed a low-fat diet, was not shown to reduce coronary heart disease, stroke, or cardiovascular disease, despite a significant reduction in LDL, nor was there a reduction in cancer. So these people followed everything they were supposed to do. They lowered their LDL. They ate low fat. They got no protection at all from heart disease. Zero.
Or cancer, which those two combined are the two biggest killers in our country by far.
Yeah, heavy hitters. And here's a quote as well. And I actually pulled, you know, these are from James DeNichelAntonio?
DeNichelAntonio.
Whatever how the hell you
pronounce
it. I know,
that's probably one of the hardest ones.
It really is. So he produced a few papers on this. So these are from his papers. And again, like always, they're on the website if you want to read them. But here's a quote. The final nail in the low-fat diet coffin is two randomized trials, one for the primary prevention of cardiovascular disease, indicating a reduction in the incidence of major cardiovascular events with a Mediterranean diet, which was a high-fat diet, compared with a low-fat diet, and the other for the secondary prevention of cardiovascular disease, the Lyme Diet Heart Study, showed that a Mediterranean diet, again, which is high-fat, reduces all-cause and cardiovascular mortality, as well as non-fatal myocardial infarction compared with a prudent or low-fat diet. So we've talked about in the past before, the Mediterranean diet really isn't a thing. It's been made up and spinned by kind of...
the olive oil industry, mostly.
For sure, right? They found a narrative so people can eat a ton of olive oil, and people bought it. You know what I'm saying? And if the only reason it's really healthier than the standard American diet is because it's higher in a fat that our body actually likes.
And it's just that the standard American diet is just that bad.
It's so trash. Yeah, it really is. So we know that losing weight is also great for heart health. So is a keto diet good for that? Of course it is. Now, can you lose weight following a low-fat diet? Yes, you can. It's been done and promoted for years. It has many flaws and isn't the best, but it does work. There's a quote, or excuse me, a study by Noakes. Noakes, we talked about a lot. We really like that guy. Comparing low-carb to low-fat diets. Here's a quote. Isocaloric, very low-carb diets result in similar fat loss than diets low in fat, but are more effective in improving triglycerides, HDL, fasting, and postprandial glucose and insulin concentrations. Very low-carb diets may be useful in short-term management of subjects with insulin resistance and high triglycerides. The best biomarkers for heart health are reducing body weight, high HDL, low insulin, and low triglycerides. All of these are improved on a ketogenic diet. All of them. So how can a ketogenic diet not be good for heart health?
I don't know.
Because sometimes the one biomarker of LDL gets elevated, but everything else is good. So people will slam it for LDL, even though LDL is a shit marker for health.
Have they ever shown that LDL to be an effective marker?
No.
Because I know I've come across so many studies showing that it makes no difference.
Yeah, it doesn't.
I mean, actually,
in the right context, it doesn't.
And there's more studies showing that low LDL is more dangerous than high LDL.
Yeah, there is.
So I don't really understand why we're still holding on to that dogma. It makes no sense.
It makes no sense, yeah. I think we talked about last week how long it takes kind of science to catch up to the new information. And it just hasn't caught up to the LDL information yet. And so one of the key findings of the Noakes study was that fasting and postprandial, which just means like post-meal insulin, was lower on the very low-carb diet than the other two high-carbohydrates diets. And so that's really, I don't know, the insulin is the enemy out there as far as high insulin all the time. That's the marker for overall health, which is, I guess, neglected a lot. Like, you'll never get an insulin test when you go to the doctor.
No.
You could, like, even ask for it, and your doctor will probably push back. Like, you know, it's not going to matter. You don't need it. It's not going to be covered by insurance. But following a low-carb diet lowers insulin. And when you lower insulin, your body's able to better use fat for fuel. And that's what your heart wants. So, of course, a ketogenic diet is going to be heart healthy. And it all shows that the ketogenic diet improves insulin sensitivity. And as far as risk factors go for heart disease, like I said, insulin is the worst. The higher the insulin, the higher your chances of having heart disease. And low-carb helps with that.
Yeah, so we've been talking about, for the last month or two, just about how bad insulin resistance is. So insulin sensitivity is the opposite of that. So, yeah, you want to be insulin sensitive. You want your body to respond to these hormones properly, and that's what insulin does.
Yes.
Or that's what insulin sensitivity does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so we want to be able to do that. That's our metabolic flexibility.
Yes. And that's really it. So ketogenic diet raises HDL, lowers triglycerides, makes you more insulin sensitive. It gives your heart the fuel it actually wants, you know, at least when you have a properly formulated ketogenic diet. And that's why the ketogenic diet is heart healthy. And following a high carb, low fat diet is not heart healthy in the slightest.
And even just to expand upon that, there's so many micronutrients that are in animals that you're not going to be getting from going on a plant-based diet. Like CoQ10 is such a big one. Like the best source of CoQ10 is going to be primarily like beef heart, if you want to eat that.
Yeah.
Not everybody can find that, but any muscle meat will have CoQ10 in it. Any area that has mitochondria is going to have CoQ10. So, hey, CoQ10 is vital. Like, you need that for heart health. You're not getting that from plant sources. So if you follow the AHA's diet, then you got to be supplementing it with it. If you have to be supplementing with something, that means you're not getting it through your diet. That means it's a poor diet.
Yes.
I mean, that's pretty, like, just standard.
Like, and like you said, 200 years ago, what could we supplement with?
Nothing. Supplements didn't exist.
There was no GNCs.
Yeah.
So if your diet was, like, misformulated 200 years ago, you weren't going to be around very long.
Or you would be forced to fix it.
Yeah, you'd be forced to fix it. Exactly, yeah. Or you're dead. So,
I mean, CoQ10's one, Ribose.
Mm-hmm.
That's another one that you need for your heart. That's, hey, meat.
Yeah.
Best source of that.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about how important fat is. One of the ways to get fatty acids into your mitochondria, L-carnitine.
Yep. I was going to talk about carnitine. Yeah.
Okay, carnitine. Uh-huh. Was that first part? Carn?
Yeah.
Yeah, it means it comes from meat.
It does. That's how our body gets fat, or how our mitochondria gets fat into them. And you get that from meat. Yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, like, we can keep going on the list, like, of all these different little micronutrients that you're not going to be getting if you follow their, like, their crappy diet.
Yeah, it'd be like lean. Yeah, I know, me too. Lean white meat and vegetables and fruit.
I mean, how much CoQ10 can even be in, like, chicken breast since it's so white?
I have no clue.
I mean, it can't be very much.
I doubt it's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. Just the whole, the government recommendations are complete trash, and hopefully people can listen to this and just improve their diet and improve their health. And that's obviously the goal of this whole series, is just to get people informed, and hopefully they can make their own decisions and improve their health, because that's really what it's about.
Yeah, and just kind of just removing the negative stigma around animal sources, the animal fats, and just how bad like animals are. Like, no, we need them. We've been eating them for millions of years. There's all these studies showing how beneficial they are. And every time we keep coming up with a new topic, it just makes animal fat and just like a ketogenic diet look better and better and better. We're at episode 78. I'm pretty sure at least 60 of them have shown how much better a ketogenic diet, high in animal sources, is better than the standard American diet.
Yeah.
At least 60. Probably 70 of them.
Yeah, probably 70. Yeah. We had one on Kobe Bryant. We had one podcast for a few guests. But besides that, they've all been pro-keto, for sure. And there's a lot of information, a lot of links, a lot of proof, man. We're not just making this stuff up, man. It's all on the website. So, again, like I always say, go check it out. But yeah, I mean, I guess that was good covering it. You got anything else to say? I think that was pretty good.
Yeah, I'm surprised we didn't really talk about cholesterol that much. But, I mean, that's its own little subject.
It is.
Yeah.
And people are real touchy on cholesterol for some reason.
Well, I mean, like,
it's such a buzzword.
Our parents' generation have been told, like, to fear cholesterol their entire life. So, yeah, I get that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't even want that problem today. You know what I mean? I'm not prepared for it. But, do you have a tip of the week this week?
Yeah, so today is the February 12th, so Valentine's Day is right around the corner. And on our Facebook page, I'm, like, doing a lot of posts on sleep. So I'm just going to combine the two into one.
Sure.
So I've made a article about this probably a year or two ago, talking about the bedroom and how it's good for two S's. Sleep is one of them. Valentine's Day is the other one.
So, figure it out.
Yeah, kind of figure it out. And just how much those two are correlated. So if you have one right before you sleep, you're going to be a little bit tired. you're going to sleep better. You're also increasing hormones like oxytocin, serotonin, so you're going to be sleeping even better that way. And if you sleep better, you're going to wake up feeling more refreshed. Your hormones are going to be more balanced. Your testosterone is going to be a little bit higher. So the next day you're going to be feeling great. You're going to have more testosterone. What does that do? That increases your sex drive. So you're more likely to do that again the next night.
It's a positive feedback loop.
Yeah. One of the few times we're actually talking about a positive feedback loop here. So it's a great cycle to get into. So if you're looking to get some great sleep, have some great sex.
That's it.
Yep.
All right. That's a good tip of the week. Hope you guys like the podcast. You can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, feel free to rate and subscribe on your favorite podcast provider. That's how more people can come and find this podcast. Share this episode with a friend or family member. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and YouTube. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.